This is where they are building the largest nuclear fusion reactor in the world.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me I had to check out this pool.
America on Main Street and at the dinner table is talking about infrastructure when 20 years ago, they didn't even know what that meant.
Today, those towers are an astounding display of wealth, prestige, and engineering firsts.
It's impacting everyday Americans.
I am against the train the way it's being done right now.
New York City housing is a scam. It is a scam.
The Shard in central London is being officially opened today, and at 310 metres tall, it's Europe's newest and tallest skyscraper.
Hello, I'm Fred Mills.
And this is the world's best construction podcast
by the B1M.
Hello and welcome to your latest episode of the World's Best Construction Podcast. I'm your host, Fred, and today I'm joined by co-host Liam Marsh down in Sydney, Australia, because Luke Bly is off gallivanting around the USA. So just me and you today, mate. How are you doing?
It is, mate. Just a couple of OGs. A couple of B1M OGs.
The dream team. The A team right here.
Who's Mr. T? You can be Mr. T, mate. You got the muscles for it. Oh, speaking of muscles, I've seen some interesting Instagram uploads lately, mate. I was actually in Thailand just sunning myself on the beach and, oh, Fred Mills, little upload, little
You're
selfie
obsessed
on
me,
the beach.
Aren't you?
Little You're topless,
obsessed with me.
topless
how,
selfie.
How have we got to that in the first 30 seconds of this podcast?
Because I mean, holding it in my mind, I've been like, oh, I must pull Fred up on that on the podcast when I'm back on it next week.
Great.
And
what
I
was your reaction? Did you think?
I was like, another topless picture of Fred on my Instagram feed. Great.
You're welcome. I'm basically getting it on the record because I've been off upper body training for 6 months and it's been miserable. So now I'm actually back in upper body training and I'm getting older by thanks for that, mate. Getting older by the day. I'm like, right, I'm looking good. Let's get on the history books. The history books being my Instagram feed.
Yeah, mate. Show it if you got it. I say, you know.
Absolutely.
I always say that.
It's all downhill now. In my late 30s, so.
Yeah. But yeah, mate, everything's good here. Just got back. 2 weeks leave, as you know. Had a really good time in Thailand. I swam with some giant turtles. Swam with baby reef sharks. Yeah, mate. Drank heaps of Chang beers. Ate heaps of food. It was lovely.
Nice. How big were these reef sharks?
Mate, just babies. Like, I don't know. Size, like the size of your foot.
Okay. You messaged me like, yeah, spam with sharks down. Liam's brave. I was pushing you like in your wetsuit and your harpoon. No?
Yeah, mate. No, they were tiny. Cool. Very cool. Highly recommend it. Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool. There's like swimming little schools, shark swimming schools or whatever. Yeah, around the reefs. It's great.
Wow.
Very cool.
I'm currently preparing to go to Malaysia next week. We are filming with the B1M in Kuala Lumpur next week, which is incredibly exciting. So next week, guys, you have got, for the first time ever, one of these podcasts without me hosting it. It's going to be Liam and Luke hosting it, which is exciting. The other thing is that I'm basically heading into what is, it says 35 degrees every day, but the feels like temperature is 44, 45.
Yeah.
And I'm not built for that. We've established
You're going to die, mate. When I was in Thailand, it was like 37, felt like 42. It's not the heat, it's the humidity. And it's the fact that you cannot cool down unless you're under air conditioning and you're going to be on site. I can't wait. You're going to complain more than what you did on that trip to Munich that time.
Why can't I just do shoots that are like a nice casual 20, 22 degrees? I'm either freezing in Antwerp or the Faroe Islands or being boiled alive in like Frankfurt or Kuala Lumpur. Anyway, it should be good. Looking forward to going over there. It's going to be a very exciting shoot. Also, in the exciting stuff pile, guys, we've got a very good episode coming out for you today. We are talking about The Secret Machine Transforming Hong Kong, a very cool video that came out in the B1M yesterday. Saudi Arabia shockingly cutting back on its ambitions for the line. Fulham's new pool top stand in London. And as always, we're going to be reading some of your messages and comments from the week. Let's do it. Let's dive in. Let's go. First first this week, we are talking about The Secret Machine Transforming Hong Kong, a video that came out on the BLM yesterday. Now, this is all about the Hong Kong Kai Tak Air Force site. Now, you might not know about this, but basically Hong Kong used to have another airport. It's got an airport at the minute, which is out on this man-made island. It's an incredible feat of infrastructure and construction. We've covered it before. But before that, it had another airport that was basically in the center of the city called Kai Tak Airport. Home of some very terrifying landings where the 747s and large aircraft used to basically land very steeply in between skyscrapers and right in the heart of the city. It was terrifying. There's some footage of that at the start of the video. Anyway, that 320-hectare former airport site is now being turned into a massive new mixed-use residential, commercial and leisure district. The tip of the former runway has been turned into a tourism and leisure hub, while the rest of the site is being turned into, lo and behold, premium housing and a commercial district, like many cities do. This is it's a strip of land. Basically, the runway sticks out from the Kowloon side of Hong Kong, out into Kowloon Bay. It's a big, long strip of land they're now turning into a new district because the airport's been shut since, I think, 1998. Basically they've moved over to the bigger airport out, way over towards Macau that way. And now they're redeveloping it. There's also a large park with a 50,000 seat stadium. Huge, huge development. What do you make of this project, Liam? Airport to new districts, eh?
Yeah, super interesting, man. The most interesting thing to me was how the planes used to land at Kai Tak, to be honest. Where I live in an area where there's you're on a flight path, and if you're not used to a flight path, it can be super annoying when you're just at home or watching TV. We often mute TVs and things like that. So seeing that the planes flew through the city, basically into the center of the city, is just blew my mind. So obviously it's good they've moved it to the outer suburbs. The project's insane. I mean, it's super impressive.
Yeah, it's one of those places where like, the scale of Hong Kong is hard to fathom. I remember I haven't been there since 2007, so a very long time. But I flew into the new airport now. But even that, like when you're flying over Hong Kong Bay, just the development, the skyscrapers, the verticality of it all. And that was an impressive landing as it was. So I can't imagine what landing at this airport must have been like. I'm sure it was more terrifying than picturesque, but
yeah.
But yeah.
How dense is Hong Kong as well? Just looking at the footage and things like that, and obviously this new development, and I know we're going to get into how the tunneling and things like that were made, but it shocked me how I always knew Hong Kong was dense, but seeing the video and seeing the storyline of it really blew me away, just showing how complex it is and dense.
Yeah. It's kind of like Manhattan Island in a way as well. You've got like, there's this high desire to live in that area on and around the bay. There's very limited flat land to build on because obviously it's surrounded by mountains. So you've got a very high desire to live on a very small piece of land, which is why the buildings start soaring upwards. It's also to do with like how the land is controlled. So the Hong Kong authorities only release certain plots of land for development every now and then. So when they do get developed, developers go really big and build like crazy tall buildings on them. It is mind-blowing stuff. But it's now getting bigger with this district.
So was this area, this plot of land, was this just laying dormant of the old airport?
Basically, it was the old airport. The development's been on the table for literally decades. They've been kicking it around for a while. But it's now finally got the go-ahead and is cracking on. As I said, it's kind of a bit unexciting. You've got mixed-use residential, commercial, leisure, you know, the standard stuff you get in any new city district now. I imagine there's a mixed-use podium somewhere. We always have one of them, don't we?
Do, mate, we do.
Now, to the north, the site is bordered by two of the busiest roads in East Kowloon. Right, so the top of the site is basically locked in by these massive, massive highways. I say massive highways, just to put this in context for you, if you're listening outside of Hong Kong, 15 to 20 lanes of traffic sometimes on these highways. They are absolutely enormous. They make you know, LA looks small, really. Huge, huge roads going on. They effectively kind of cut off the development site. They kind of block it in, so it's very hard to get in and out of the development site. So what they are doing is building a new network of tunnels and bridges around the perimeter to better connect this development site with the wider city beyond those highways. The challenge facing engineers here was that they had to build tunnels that were big enough to meet capacity, while not impacting the constant flow of traffic on those roads, and kind of literally weaving these new tunnels in between the roads above them and then the very shallow surfaces beneath them. There's these tiny, tiny little windows that kind of like thread the needle with these tunnels all through these existing surfaces just to connect this new Kai Tak Airport development with the city. And in doing that, they exposed a fatal flaw of the TBM, which, as you know, dear listener, is the tunnel boring machine. Now, we've talked about TBMs a lot on this podcast. Liam has become a TBM fan, I think, over the last year or so, mate. Would you
say?
Big
fan, mate. Big fan. Some of my favorite videos have got TBMs in them.
There you go. Not boring, but exciting. Now, when a TBM makes its way through the earth, it produces an effect called settlement. So basically, you'll know this. When you dig something, you know, dig a hole at home or whatever, you do get settlement occurring. That basically means that as you excavate soil, as the TBM in this case excavates soil, it creates a weakness in the ground above the cutter head as earth falls down to fill the void behind it. Now, that there's a degree of that with TBMs. Obviously, as a TBM moves forward, it's putting concrete segments in place behind it to line the tunnel and prevent that happening. But you do still get a degree of settlement because there isn't as much pressure in the soil. Basically, you've taken some of the soil away, so there is a degree of settlement going on. Now, with enough clearance, like when you're 40, 50 meters down under a city, that doesn't have any effect on anything above. It's not noticeable at all. But some of the tunnels here are just 7 meters beneath the surface, and the effect of the settlements is made even worse by the weak alluvial soil that there is around this site, which could pose a risk to utilities. So, you know, if you undermine and cause settlement around utility pipes, cables, gas mains, that's obviously not good. In one instance here, there is a storm drain just 1.5 meters away from the roof of one of these new tunnels. That is some seriously close tunnel engineering, right? Now, enter a machine we've never heard of before on the B1M. This fascinates me. I love that this exists. It is a rectangular TBM or RTBM. How excited are you to hear about this, Liam?
Mate, as soon as I heard RTBM, I thought you would make fun of the name.
Oh, exciting. Yeah, they could have called it something better, couldn't they?
When I saw it, I was actually pretty excited when I saw the graphic we were laying down in the video. It's wicked, not gonna lie. Yeah. It's awesome.
World changing, right? TBMs are not just circular, guys. This has literally blown my mind. I've covered construction for years. I didn't know they did a rectangular TBM or RTBM, as I'm now calling it. It's my new quiz question. I'm popping this in. This is my new bit of construction knowledge. It's awesome. So with this, instead of a circular cutting head, there is a rectangular shield that houses 5 cutting heads inside it. So there's a large one in the center that does the majority of the work, and then 4 smaller cutting heads in each corner rotate elliptically, creating a rectangular excavation. This is fascinating, fascinating stuff. Now, much like a normal TBM, it gets dropped into a shaft and then gets pushed forward by a hydraulic jack, and it lines the tunnel as it goes. So there's these rectangular-shaped concrete segments that are being dropped in behind the TBM as it moves forward, creating a rectangular tunnel. Now, why the heck use a rectangular TBM, you may be asking? Good question. When a circular TBM creates settlements, it gets focused onto a point at the top of the cutter head. So if you can imagine, the pressure is sort of all falling down on one point at the top of that circular cutter head. Because an RTBM has a large flat surface, the effect, the weight of that settlement, gets spread over a larger area and causes less disruption to the ground above, which is an incredibly clever maneuver. I literally didn't know these things existed. There are only a handful of RTBMs in the world, and this is the first one ever used in Hong Kong, and all for a pedestrian tunnel. These tunnels are not, they aren't road tunnels, they aren't rail tunnels. It's just for pedestrian connectivity between this new Kai Tak Airport development and the wider city.
So are they only designed for tunnels of that size, or could you, or are there examples out there where they actually build, you know, multiple lane tunnels?
Yeah, there must be bigger ones. I think this must be more expensive or complicated than just using a regular TBM, basically, because I've seen it in the past where it's better to have a rectangular tunnel, like the Fehmarn Belt Tunnel, the tunnel we talked about in Scheldt River Tunnel in Belgium, where you've got like multi-lane motorways going on, you've got a rail line going on, and what you don't want is a big circular tunnel, because that circle has to get bigger and bigger and bigger vertically just to accommodate the horizontal lanes and stuff. So I think there's definitely an area, a window for it, but there must be a limit where it's no longer useful to use a regular TBM and you want to go for like an immersed tube tunnel technique. So medium-sized tunnels, I would say.
it's less, minimizes wastage as well, right? It's the circular tunnel. There's a lot of area that you're actually cutting away that you're not actually using. Whereas I suggest with the rectangular, you're actually making better use of that size.
I'm just good because I wanted to know, right, how many RTBMs are there in the world? Because it would be a good fact for this podcast for me to have actually worked that out before I came on air. And I've typed in how many RTBMs in the, and then I stopped, it was quite funny. How many RTBMs in the World Cup, Premier League, NFL? I think it thinks I'm trying to spell teams. That's how rare.
Maybe just say the whole sentence, mate. Rectangular tunnel boring machine.
Yeah.
In the world. No,
apparently it stands for recent trends in biomaterial sciences. That's not what I want. I want rectangular tunnel boring machines. No information. God, Google's got nothing on it.
Wow.
That's how rare. That's how rare these RTBMs are, guys.
Do you know, this is going to put you on the spot, mate, who built this?
What, the RTBM?
I know the TBMs in Sydney, from memory, German company built in China, shipped over here to Sydney to build them. Could have that.
Yeah,
wrong.
It was Rectangular Tunnel Boring Machines Limited, and they are based in Germany, shipping to Hong Kong.
Wow.
That's I'm totally making that up, by the way. We'll find out and let you know. Yeah. What an amazing project. Amazing project, but also an amazing feat of engineering. Once again, construction innovating to make what looks like the impossible happen. It's great stuff, yeah. Right?
What always fascinates me with these type of projects, and anyway, especially places like Hong Kong, London, is when we show like a map or like an underground map of all the services, all the piping, all the sewage, all of that stuff, and then where the current train lines are and things like that, and how they essentially map out exactly where everything is so they can actually drill through it to absolute precision to not hit anything. That always just blows my mind. So for the people that don't have a construction background like myself, so there's obviously some kind of mapping system that they use, which they'd obviously plan to that. Is that like a digital, that have like a digital version of that, like a digital twin essentially?
And this you basically use a mixture of stuff. You're using historical records, so records from like the service companies about where they've put services and where things are. But then you're also basically triangulating that with your own radar survey so you can see what's in the ground, but also like sensitivity surveys as well, so you can understand and get a reaction from what's called a Cat and Jenny machine as to where these services are on the ground. And you're basically putting all those things together to try and de-risk it as much as possible. But the fact is, until you actually dig into the ground, you don't know what's there in terms of fossils, archaeological stuff, services that have been decommissioned but not taken out, services that aren't on the services drawings, which is rarer in Hong Kong, but can happen in some more historic cities. So it's a dangerous activity. Anything in the ground in construction is dangerous. There's an element of unknown and an element of risk as well, which is why you get in construction contracts quite a lot of money put in for risk allocation in the ground, because contractors are trying to cover themselves, particularly through on a price, because you just don't know what's down there sometimes. But yeah, the work that goes into planning this, making it happen, and navigating, because again, they're using, you sort of think, well, if it's that complex and that small, why not just do like, you know, hand excavation with shovels and stuff? But you've got to remember, this is a tunnel that's, it's shallow, but it's digging under a 20 lane highway. You know, you're going a long way here underground. So yeah, the use of the RTBM machines is just incredible. Guys, you've got to go and check out this video, because there's some incredible CGI. The RTBM has got to be seen to be believed. I feel like we need mugs and t-shirts of the RTBM.
I agree,
I've seen
I
an
agree.
RTBM.
Yeah. I mean, have you though?
Well, in a video.
with this, what I was noticing, the tunnel's only 140 meters. I don't think we have any price on how much it costs. I don't know if the team knows like an estimate of that.
No.
What I found interesting is, again, comparing it to London, is I couldn't see something like this being built in central London to ease congestion for pedestrians. Could you see London doing something like this? The cost, obviously, and them spending the money on a pedestrian walkway.
They do spend money on pedestrian walkways, but I can't see them doing something this advanced for it. You're right. Maybe that's because I've become skeptical and pessimistic as I get older. Maybe that's the case. I'm still reeling from the fact that the Faroe Islands spent, what was it, like $300 million, $200 million on one of those new tunnels, a long undersea tunnel under the ocean. And that was a few weeks after we talked about London digging a new tunnel under the Thames for $2.8 billion.
Mm.
Like, what's going on? What are we doing?
Shocking, isn't it?
It is. It's unreal. Same in Sydney, mate. You guys are racking up the cost on that old Sydney Metro.
Yep. What's it up to now?
I don't know. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
$65 billion.
Yeah, it's definitely over 50. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate. I mean,
get the Faroese down. Just get them to build our tunnels for us.
I know Oz materials do cost a lot, and I do know wages are a lot higher here.
Yeah. Guys, if you've worked with a rectangular tunnel boring machine, this is niche right now, because we've only got like five people listening. So I want to dig into this. I make the puns now without even realizing. We want to dig into this. Have you worked with a rectangular tunnel boring machine? Have you come across one? Have you seen one? Let us know. podcast@theb1m.com. Also in the news this week, we are heading over to Saudi Arabia, where lo and behold, the Saudi Arabian government have scaled back their immediate plans for the line. Now, the original plan put forward was for a 500-meter tall mirrored linear city stretching 170 kilometers across the desert and eventually housing 9 million people. We've talked about it a lot. This is basically two of One World Trade Center in New York standing 500 meters high in the middle of a desert and then extending sideways for 170 kilometers with a new vertical city in between them. It's a hugely ambitious project. That ultimate vision is still on the table, but now sources familiar with the project who spoke to Bloomberg, and this was first reported in Bloomberg, we should say, are saying that officials now expect just 2.4 kilometers to have been constructed by 2030 and less than 300,000 residents to have moved in to this city of supposedly 9 million people. It is a long way to go from a 170-kilometer city down to a 2.4-kilometer city by 2030. I mean, that just basic maths, that puts the 170-kilometer ultimate vision, what, like 200 years away? It's going to be a long way off. As a result of all this, apparently at least one contractor has begun to dismiss a portion of its workers on the site. That is according to a document seen by Bloomberg. Bloomberg did reach out to officials who declined to comment on this news. What do you make of this one, Liam? The line, shockingly, realised to be too ambitious.
Oh, is that sarcasm, mate? I bet, you know, I saw this while I was away and I was like, oh, Fred's going to rub it in our faces. From the outset, you're like, no, it's not going to happen. Definitely not going to happen. And I disagreed with you. I just wanted you to be wrong. And here we are now, mate. Here we are. Not that shocked. I mean, when you read it as well, now that it's been obviously pulled back, scaled back, 170 kilometers across the desert mirrored is absolutely ridiculous. It just really makes it like you just realize how naive everyone was to believe it, right?
Well, it is still happening, right? Okay, so they're still going for it. They're just saying that by 2030 they're not going to have got as far with it. Or I'm not even sure if they have conceded something. They just sort of let it slip that basically they're only going to have built 2.4 kilometers by 2030. But what's basically made everyone realize is that this huge city is a very, very long way off. It's worth saying, guys, that if you still build a 500 meter tall mirrored skyscraper in the desert times two and extend it sideways for 2.4 kilometers, that is still a very impressive construction project. Like, don't go thinking it's got a lot easier, because it ain't. It's still an immense project.
I a part of me feels like the 170Ks was just 170K like length of it was just a stir up. It was a really good PR campaign, because you remember, like, it was everywhere. neon, the line was everywhere. It was in billboards in London. It was in magazines. It was on radio. It was all over LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube. They tried to work with us. I can't help but feel it was a very well executed marketing campaign to get people talking about it. And now all those projects, Trojena, the Macabre. Oh, I mean, don't know if I can see the Macabre happening now. It's the Macabre, isn't it? I don't know if I see that happening now. The big cube, like some of them I do, some of the hotels, but like now I'm like, whoa, was everyone right? I think this was just a big campaign.
I think you're right, mate. I think the idea was to get a lot of talking, get a lot of investment generated, and that investment is starting to come. But I think the government are realizing they can't fund all this stuff, and to fund it all, I think they were talking about, again, I need to check this, but I think I saw the Saudi Arabian government were fishing around for loans from other people to help complete some of these projects, which, you know, when Saudi Arabia are looking for a loan, they're in trouble. And worth saying, I mean, is it any surprise the comment section on this has been brutal, absolutely brutal. People saying there's a lot of sarcasm, shocker, unbelievable stuff. Who would have thought this would happen? the meme of the little girl in the back of the car, sort of looking shocked and confused, that would never get old for me. Where she's just the little girl's just like shifting her eyes from side to side. lots of comments saying we all saw this one coming. One guy was posting away on Twitter like he was Nostradamus, like he, you know, he predicted this. He could see this coming before anyone else. It's like totally, it's hardly big news, mate.
Yeah.
End of the line, eh? Get your comments coming in, guys. podcast@theb1m.com. Let us know what you think of that one. Now, swinging over to London in the UK for a project that is actually pretty outrageous, but in the context of the line, seems very straightforward and normal. Fulham Football Club has unveiled plans for its new Riverside stand, complete with a rooftop pool. That is right, a rooftop pool by a football ground. Fulham, no less. In London, in the UK, by the Thames, looking over that lovely polluted river. Fantastic. Designed by We Are Populous, the 8,000-seat new addition to Craven Cottage is going to take the ground's overall capacity to 28,500. There's also going to be a hotel and a health club. I'm not sure if these architects have met Fulham fans, but infinity pools, hotels and health clubs, they don't instantly jump to mind when I think of Fulham fans. Big apologies if you're a Fulham fan listening.
I don't think they're going to be selling Stella on tap there, are they?
On the side of the pool.
Pints of Carlin.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. Yeah. I mean, Fulham's quite an affluent area. I suppose maybe they're trying to attract more affluent,
this is the thing.
Punters and things like that.
Fulham is a nice area. Chelsea's a nice area. But where this ground is not. It's actually technically not in that area. It's a bit further along to an area that's not so nice.
What's the area?
Oh, I've forgotten now. Hang on. I'm going to cause all kinds of offence now. Offending another area of London.
Hammersmith was on, mate.
Yes. So, right. There's Chelsea, then there's Fulham, and then way down sort of over to the west on the riverside is Craven Cottage, which is not as... It's still a lovely area of London, I should say. But it's not quite as nice as Fulham and Chelsea up the street a bit.
Yeah. I like the design. I think it's cool. I think, you know, more for London getting developments like this. I think the architect's confused about London weather, the Thames. Obviously, the Thames, that you've got a speedboat cruising by. Man, like, it looks great. I mean, to be honest, it kind of looks like a shortage house.
It does look nice, doesn't it? Yeah, like a private members club. One guy here is saying, gotta love how they've got the Thames looking like Dubai Marina in that render. another person, Theo, says, average Fulham match day experience, just a bunch of nice blokes chilling with cocktails. Yeah, I don't know. I can't see it being like this. Now, the other week, this is a bit of an anecdote for you. The other week, we went to go and see our local football team. So they gave out some free tickets just at the school gates to go down for the local football team match. And they're a pretty good team. I'm not going to name the team right here because it might reveal where I live. But they've got like a mini stand, mini stadium. I think they're in second division. They're pretty good.
Wow.
Went down with my kids to watch them play a football match, and it was unreal. The language, the air went blue. There were kids around. This bloke missed. I had three kids with me at the time. I was the only adult because two of my kids brought one of their friends. And this guy missed a goal, and the air turned blue. The whole stand just erupted into swear words and shouting. I didn't have enough hands to cover the kids' ears. I was like, what do I do? So I basically just clapped my hands over my young daughter's ears, and my son heard every word under the sun. Shocking.
Wow, shocking. Mate. English football games.
In this infinity pool, you'll be there with your speedos on, just taking in the South London sun, you know?
Yeah. There's a gym there.
That's where I see you. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Again, your average Fulham fan doesn't look like a gym goer. I've massively offended Fulham here. I'm going to get lynched if I go to a match, but...
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's pretty... Yeah. I think it's a bit confused.
Yeah.
The design's nice.
It does look nice. It does look good. I think for the kind of like the high-end hospitality, VIP viewers, definitely. Definitely. I'm not sure the infinity pool on a match day is the place to be, but let's see. So there we go, guys. That was awesome, the news. I've managed to offend Saudi Arabia further and Fulham and large chunks of London and the Fulham FC fans. So get your comments coming in. Get your abuse coming in. Is Liam.Marsh at the B1M.com? I'm kidding. Podcast at the B1M.com.
My DMs are open. Send them over.
Yeah. Oof. There's an offer. Slide into Liam's DMs, guys. Yeah, get your comments coming in. Podcast at theb1m.com. Now we're swinging over to the email inbox. Luke not being here means I've had to work really hard this week. I've had to try and generate conversation with Liam, which is not easy. I've had to, you know, go and find the emails. I've been flat out.
So it's searching through the hundreds and hundreds of emails in the inbox.
Yeah, that's just overwhelmed with correspondence. You know, it was really nice last week. We had a week off. It was the first ever break week in 92 episodes, this podcast. We've done 92 weeks back to back. More than that, because some weeks we had double podcasts. So, you know, we're heroes. But there was a nice, I got a few messages, not a lot of messages, but a few messages. People going, where's my podcast? I missed it. I was looking forward to it. I was all ready for it and it wasn't there.
Oh, that's nice,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah. Hundreds of people divided by hundreds of people. Like three people.
Yeah.
Right. We have an email coming in. This is from Carter Hickling. Carter with a K. That's unusual. He says, hello, Luke, Liam and Fred. I've been a long time B1M subscriber and love the podcast. I recently fell behind, but I'm trying to catch back up listening. I am from the Greater Toronto area and was reading about an interesting energy project that's been under development for a while underneath Lake Ontario. This is Toronto's Enwave Energy Corporation has built a deep lake cooling system for the city of Toronto, and I don't remember it ever being mentioned on the B1M. Well, you wouldn't know, mate, have you? Because you've slipped behind. You're not on top of stuff. No, he's right. We haven't mentioned it. Ontario has been a leader in energy for quite a long time, but this is something pretty unique. Apologies if it's already been covered. Keep the content coming. It's been great to see how much it's taken off lately. All right, Carl. What do you mean, mate? I've been killing this for years.
The podcast or the videos?
He doesn't say.
Oh.
Keep the content coming. It's been great to see how much it's taken off lately. Maybe because you've been on holiday, mate.
Thanks, Carl with a K.
Yeah, all the best from Canada with a C, Carter with a K. Thanks, Carter with a K. We really appreciate that. We'll have a look into it, mate. We'll definitely cover it. I've now read it out on a podcast, so, you know, other magpie-type YouTube channels and media institutions who all listen to this podcast religiously will now go and steal that idea and make it before us. Unreal.
Mm.
Unreal. Anyway, get your messages coming in, guys. Podcast at b1m.com. If you want to be mocked live on air, if you want to have your name made fun of and read out by me, Luke and Liam, then send us your message, podcast at theb1m.com. Mate, we've done it. We've got through it.
Mm. Very, it's been a shorter very smooth. Episode. Yeah, very quick.
Very quick. Smooth.
Luke does love a chat. I like that. He loves to chat about vernacular.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, this is, oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, God, here we go.
The cladding. Yeah, mate, the cladding. Yeah,
the vernacular.
It depends about the cladding and the renders, you know. Yeah.
How you doing, Luke? Yeah, not too bad, mate, yeah.
Oh, that's quite good. That's quite good.
Sell some strawberries, yeah. You want a box of strawberries, yeah.
Yeah, mate, he's always selling stuff. He's selling strawberries. He's trying to sell dogs a couple of weeks ago.
Was he?
And then you're on a lab dog puppy. You're the only one that wants a lab dog puppy.
That's classic Essex. What? Classic Essex. You want to...
Why are you always trying to sell me stuff, mate? I'm in Australia, too. He's like, oh, you know anyone that wants a Labrador? No, mate.
Why is he going to get a Labrador to Australia?
Mate, no. He was asking if I knew anyone. He's like, you know, I think he's getting a commission or something. It's like his brother's puppy or something. Like, mate.
He's not here to defend himself. Now, next week, guys, you've got Luke and Liam and not me. So goodness knows what it's going to be like. Goodness knows how rinsed I'm going to get. They're just jealous. They're jealous of my hunky physique and, you know, unparalleled success. Must be what it is.
Yeah, right, that's it. That's it.
It's been a nice short episode today, mate. We've got through it.
Yeah,
you're not so talkative. That's the thing, which is great for a podcast.
I mean, you know, I'm here, mate. I'm here for support.
You know what I like with you? It's quality, not quantity.
Yeah. I just don't drivel on.
Guys, now we need some things from you. Thank you for listening, but we need some things from you. You need a 5-star review, please, over on Apple and Spotify. If you thought it was good, leave us a review. We'd really appreciate that. Also, we are raising money through our Get Construction Talking initiative. We are trying to raise awareness of construction's mental health crisis and raise money for construction's mental health charities around the world through our Get Construction Talking initiative. It's been founded by myself, the B1M, and Procore. Do go and check that out. You can make a donation right now over at getconstructiontalking.org/donate. That is getconstructiontalking.org/donate. We'd really appreciate your help and support in helping us tackle what is a shocking and deep-rooted industry issue. So yeah, please get your donations coming in. And as always, guys, let us know what you thought about today's episode. Let us know about what you think is going on in the world, construction related, obviously, and let us know if you worked on a rectangular tunnel boring machine. If you've come across an RTBM, get your comments coming in, podcast@theb1m.com. Cracking through this morning, mate. Lovely.
Yeah, we did this last time.
I can't keep a straight face now.